this week on Thingamabob.
I hope those ghosts paid rent.
We love gaslighting.
Masks, iconic, beloved, tragic, comedic, theater.
Stay tuned for more.
Baseball bats and gallon cowboy hats and more. Magic rings and other nerdy things in store. Listen on in, it's time for Thingamabob. Better tune in, it's time for Thingamabob.
Thingamabob!
Well, hello, Josh.
Well, hello, Brie.
Hello to everybody listening.
And welcome to Thingamabob.
This week's theme is theater things.
Yay!
There's no business like show business.
I love that you always have a little song to sing.
I can't. My brain is never ending with the stupid musical references. It's really, it's exhausting, to be honest.
It's because we know a little bit about theater.
We know a little.
Don't we?
One could say that we have entire degrees in theater.
Thousands of dollars.
Uh-huh.
Of our parents' dollars.
Or the government's.
Or the government's. Or the universities.
Or, yeah, hey.
We love a scholarship.
We love a scholarship.
Scholar.
Anyways.
You want my rose?
I do want your rose, yeah.
Okay, my rose is that I'm back in the workforce. Speaking of theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
A contributing member of society.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting.
Can't pay the bills being an actor. You gotta
usually
cater.
Usually not.
You gotta serve. You gotta work.
You gotta work.
W-E-R-K.
Yeah,
I can't really describe the amazing event. There's this red dot on me right now, sniper.
Yeah.
That I had this weekend.
I mean, you didn't have to sign an NDA or anything. I'm sure you could discuss it.
No, I didn't. Yeah, I was totally fine. It was basically an overwhelming event, and it was my first catering event back.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt, like, pretty confident about running it and what was going on or whatever. But, of course, like, every event, and I mistakenly forgot about this part of catering, everything changes every minute.
Yeah.
And like when you're trying to change for someone else and they don't understand that that changing takes a lot of effort, you get mad. And then on top of that, you also have to tell other people to do it when you're a captain. And so it's like having to be like, hey guys, I know this sucks, but we need to, we broke down a whole buffet. I'll give you a little details. We broke down a whole buffet. And because this event was canceled because of a hurricane.
Hurricane Henri.
And they decided not to cancel the event completely and let people who stayed
participate. It was canceled, uncanceled.
And we had to reset up that buffet.
That's awful. And this was your rose, just to recap.
Oh, wait.
Just to recap, this is your rose of the week.
Oh, you want to know why it was my rose?
Why?
Because I made rent.
Oh. Yes. That's,
I forgot. Yeah. I got so distracted by the problems of this event, but the money, baby, is in my bank account.
Yeah,
because
that always feels good.
That's the best part about this job is that they pay like next day.
That's amazing.
It's so amazing. Yeah.
So is it your rose and your thorn, or do you have a different thorn?
I have a different thorn.
Great. Hit me.
This thorn is my aircon.
I hate it when you say aircon. We are not British.
Oh my God. Like, let me live.
No.
English is an amalgamation. Is that the right word?
Sure.
Of many different languages and dialects and ways to say things. So how dare you come for me and say we're not British? Because we might be.
Okay.
Well, I'm on something else today.
Your aircon is
My
broken.
Aircon is broken. Yeah. It's clicking, and I can't sleep because the clicking is loud and annoying, but then in order to get rid of the clicking, I have to turn off the aircon, and then it's hot.
Yeah. It's like, you know, we're about to hit another heat wave in New York. It's going to be like 92 degrees plus whatever humidity index is added on top of that this week.
Why does 92 degrees seem not that high?
I don't
That's
know.
That's a heat wave? Isn't like 100 a heat wave?
Not in New York, because our humidity is so intense that 92 plus humidity is like, it's at least 10 degrees hotter.
That's
sometimes
fair.
More, yeah.
Okay, what's your rose and thorn?
Look forward to that. Hopefully it gets fixed.
Is that your thorn of this next week?
It's not. You want my thorn first?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. My thorn of this week is that all summer long, I have been entering the digital lottery.
Oh, no.
For the Merry Wives of Windsor.
Oh.
At the Public Theater's Central Park outdoor location. They have pod seating for, like, distanced people. They have regular seating, too, but... Anyways, I was entering all summer to go see this show because I really wanted to see live theater and I love the Public, blah, blah, blah. I have never won until this past week when the one day I failed to check my email every hour on the hour is the day that I won. And yet it took me so long to check my email that the claim window had expired. And so I lost my probably one and only chance to go see The Merry Wives of Windsor at the Public.
And maybe my one and only chance.
Yeah, actually, because I would have brought you.
It would have been literally right now, Brie.
It would have. Well, that's so depressing.
A couple hours ago.
It would have been tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's it was very upsetting, and I was very angry with myself for not checking my email. Because the tickets are free, by the way. That's the other thing that's, like, so amazing about them, is that for this particular, like, element of the Public, I don't know what to call it, this particular series, tickets are always free, but it's like an insane lottery to get tickets.
I'm sorry, but I'm still on the fact that you don't get email notifications.
Yeah.
That's so necessary.
I guess it wasn't for me, usually, because I check my email so frequently, because I get bored and I'm like, let's see if I got a message. let's see if anybody likes me. And I got an email. I don't know what it was. It was like the one and only time I went 3 hours without checking my email, and the claim window is only 2 hours. So,
wow.
I missed the tickets, and it was very, very upsetting to me.
I'm sure there's a good part of your week.
You know what? There was.
A rose, maybe?
It's my rose. Yeah. So my rose of the week was actually just that I, like, sang again. I don't know how to phrase it. So our friend Olivia does these, like, live stream event things, or, like, they're called Rooms. It's on an app called Airtime. It's a fun time if you want to check it out. And she does these things where she, like, invites singers to come do an open call and just sort of, like, perform whatever song they want, sort of, like, get the wheels turning again. And this past week was a Disney theme. And it was super fun because Disney music is, like, very nostalgic. And for me, it's, like, a little easier to sing than some of the other rep that's out there. And so I got to go and sing a little Disney music. And it was, like, very fun. And I feel like I am always very judgmental of myself when I sing. And I felt good about that.
So, that is a rose.
Yeah, it was a nice feeling.
It's hard to feel good about your own performance.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I'm not alone on that. I think a lot of performers...
Oh my God, yeah.
We judge ourselves harder than anyone else ever will.
Yeah.
And I'm particularly bad about that. And so it was nice to, like, finish a performance, even if it was just, like, something kind of small and, like, in my room. It was nice to finish and like, be like, oh, that sounded really nice. Like, yay, proud of... proud of that.
You want to share with us what you sang?
Sure. It was Beauty and the Beast from Beauty and the Beast.
Oh, why? It's so sweet. Why are you so sure? It's such a cute song. I love that song.
Okay.
You
sound
Mrs.
sarcastic
Potts.
Right now. But...
Oh, it's because I have that vocal fry like you usually have.
Yeah, but mine is real.
I'm not sarcastic. No, I love that song. I thought it was so beautiful.
Thank you. That's very nice of you.
Okay. One good deed for the day.
Is a single compliment
that
to
sounded
Brianna.
Sarcastic.
That's okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Okay, let's talk about theater again.
Let's do it.
Speaking of theater and drama, Brie, I'm going to talk about masks.
Yay!
Masks have been used in ceremonies, rituals, festivals, storytelling. Since the beginning of time, we can see murals and pottery evidence of the use of masks in many different cultures. The oldest mask that hasn't been lost to time, actually, is 9,000 years old.
Oh my God.
Yeah, like, so many masks have decayed because most of them are made out of, like, wood or, mm-hmm. like,
plaster or something, like
I didn't even know if they had that, but probably, you know, like plaster or something like that.
Mud.
Maybe.
Like dried mud.
Clay. Yeah, well.
Yeah, otherwise known as clay.
Otherwise known as clay, in which this mask that survived was basically made out of, a type of that. And it's located at a museum in Paris. Oh. And it's so funny because it looks like the most basic mask, probably because of, like, some time decay to it. Mm-hmm. But it's so blank, and it just looks like this face. Which is just, like, neutral eyes and a little smile.
Little open mouth.
It looks like someone drew, like, two eye holes, a mouth hole, and said, done.
Great. It's great. Most likely did.
Probably.
Yeah.
It's old. So it made sense that many theatrical traditional performances, once they started being developed, included dramatic masks as well, because these came from those festivals and ceremonies and stuff like that. Literally, like, can be directly drawn. The classical no drama of Japan, Lamo in Tibet, Talcum in Korea, and the Topeng dance of Indonesia, etc., all have masks.
Wow.
You know, not just theatrical, but like performance in general. Yeah. In Greece, which is the star of today's show, we see the same thing happening. One of the festivals held was the Festival of Dionysia to celebrate Dionysus.
Oh.
The god of wine, entertainment, fertility, many more. people would wear masks of all different types while drinking and living it up, just like in traditional ceremonies that we had discussed earlier. And because modern theater evolved from these types of things, actors in Greek plays also wore masks. Thespis, who, according to Aristotle, is thought to be the first person to incorporate intermittent actors' speech amidst the choral songs. Like, originally in performances, they just had, like, choral songs only. No one, like, came in with, like, a little, you know, they call it prologue, but, like, monologue here and there or whatever. And that evolved into dialogue, and he wore a disguise that included a white linen mask, and therefore he was the first character and thought of as the first modern actor.
Hence thespians.
I know. Thespis.
Wow. Thespis.
Come on, we're all thespians.
It's embarrassing.
We're letting our theater flag fly right now. It's really embarrassing. We're not like those. Yeah, we are.
Yeah, we're not like those theater kids, except we absolutely are. I want to know what my theater parties were like in high school.
Yeah.
They were not cool. We did not drink. We did not do anything. We sat around with, like, snacks in my friend's basement after we finished the show and watched Lord of the Rings. And that's
supposed to be weird?
No, that was supposed to be a party.
I was like, that sounds like fun to me.
That was supposed to be a party, like a closing night party.
Yeah, well, everyone else just went to Denny's, so at least you get, like, had a
little
event.
I mean, we did that, too, but that wasn't the party. That was... We did 100%, though, do that thing where we showed up in... Maybe not in costume, but in full, like, hair and makeup. And we're like, oh, my God. We should sing the prologue from Into the Woods for this Denny's right now.
That just sounds cliche.
It is cliche, and all of us did it. And that's why it's cliche.
Jason and I were just talking about... like theater kids. I don't know why. Yeah. We were talking about like theater kids versus choir kids versus band kids and the like three different energies.
They are very different energies.
Very different.
Yeah. To be fair, I don't know if we actually ever sang, but I'm sure we talked about it and we absolutely thought that we were the coolest people in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're like, I bet our waitress has never met anyone with as much energy as we have right now.
Yeah. And she's going to love this performance we're giving to her for
free. It's midnight. And she loves it. She absolutely did
not. She's not overworked at all.
Right.
This is not a double.
Right. Yeah.
Very that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, back to Greece.
Okay.
In Greece, there were originally three types of plays. Tragedy, which didn't necessarily at the time mean tragic. It just kind of meant like drama.
Serious.
Staged. No, not even that. Oh. Just like staged, like... performed literature. And then what they would do is after that they would have a satyr play, which took characters from that dramatic tragedy, if you will, and presented them in a comic satirical way. And comedy evolved from satyr, so at its base there are really only two types of plays originally. Come on, black and white. Tragedy and comedy. So the main playwrights at this time were Aeschylus, Euripides, and Sophocles. May all the others rest in peace. I'm not talking about them. Most these shows were performed at the Theater of Dionysus because we can't get enough of him. And these, this venue held 15 to 17,000 people.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Brie, you've been to Greece. You've seen, you probably saw one of these giant amphitheaters.
I did actually. Yeah. So, when we went to the Parthenon, when we went to the Parthenon, it was, I was like, what's the most famous one in Athens? Great. The Parthenon. There's like an amphitheater that's sort of like at the base of the hill that it's up on. And that amphitheater, we saw like a live production. It was like a concert of like a Greek classical band. But the first half of the concert was like sort of like pop hits, but with an orchestra. Oh, and the second half was classical Greek music, like country music that everyone would recognize.
Ooh.
And the theater was huge. There were absolutely like thousands of people there.
Oh, wow.
And when it came time for the Greek music, everyone in the stands was like singing along with the music. It was very cool.
That is sick.
It was very cool. I was with like a group of Americans, so we were all kind of just sitting there like, woo. Clapping along. It was a very cool experience though, because like everyone knew the words.
Yeah.
And there were so many people there. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Brag, but yes, I have been to one of those theaters.
Firsthand. So what they did in these kind of like original theatrical performances is they would combine them with the festival. And so they would literally have like a festival called City Dionysia, in which they would start with like an outdoor festival type of thing. And then for the first 3 days, like basically some of these top playwrights would get to showcase three tragedies and then one satyr play, give a little like ending satirical comedic performance kind of thing.
And on a light note
kind of thing. And so this would last 3 days. And then the final 2 days, when comedy started developing, they would hold those on kind of like the last 2 days, slash then drink more wine and get drunk and do all that kind of thing. Like this giant, like theater was religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it just isn't anymore. Things like Hamilton are pretty close to a kind of religious experience for certain people where they get so obsessed with it and all that kind of thing. But these were just like so ingrained in the society that existed at the time. And that's true for like many other things that we'll talk about later as well. But it's just like, we talk about these silly experiences at Denny's.
Yeah.
But it's like, this is what people like lived during the whole time and everyone did it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there were people that didn't like it, which is why they have Seder plays.
Right.
You know, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're just born in the wrong era. Theater is just uncool.
Take me back to ancient Greece.
Yeah. All we got is Ratatouille and TikTok musical.
Oh my God.
So when performing these large shows, only three actors would traditionally play characters in the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which was so surprising to me. So I think there's a chorus as well. Obviously, there's a Greek chorus. But so what they would have to do is wear masks to play different characters. And they would wear all different types of exaggerated masks, some older, some gendered, because women couldn't act at this time.
Nice. So,
well, for a long time, women couldn't act in Shakespeare's plays either.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, we all know. I'm just telling the people.
Oh, yeah.
So they would have to wear masks like this, and some of them had, like, long hair and stuff like that to, like, differentiate between characters. And playwrights would sometimes play with audience expectation because they might see a woman or, you know, a royal figure, and then they would, like, kind of take that into account to be able to play with some of the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is where tropes like, all I can think of is Hooker with the Heart of Gold.
Oh, no.
But, you know, like, that type of thing where it's like, this is this type of person, and you're kind of like, you know.
Yeah, the fool or whatever.
The fool, but also maybe the fool wins in the end.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Because you don't expect it, because you're seeing this exaggerated mask of a character kind of thing.
Yeah.
Not Hooker.
Hooker with a heart of gold.
It's such a problematic statement. Whatever. Okay. These masks were made out of linen, wool, or leather, and they had large holes for the mouths so the actors could project out of these holes. I have read that these holes, like, were technology for amplifying the voice or whatever, but that just, you know, like megaphones type of situation.
Yeah, I heard more that that was due to how the theater was built and less the mask, but
yeah, well, yeah, the theaters were made to like
both.
I know. I just read that and I was just like, or they just are really good actors and can project.
Or they just know how to use their diaphragm.
It didn't have sound system, but yeah, those the way the theaters were built, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. The masks in tragedies were generally idealistic, heroic, while the masks in comedy were, like, exaggerated, making fun of these heroic characters. Mm-hmm. And usually they would portray them as drunken. So masks carry forward in Western culture into early forms of modern ballet and commedia dell'arte, which was a form of improvised theater based on stock characters and performed in Italy around the 16th century. Some of these characters include Arlecchino, or Harlequin, as it's sometimes named. And Harlequin's mask is kind of like large with round cheeks is a notable feature. Pantalone, an older looking mask with a large nose. And Brighella, whose mask has angry eyebrows.
Oh.
Masks also show up in East Japan, where in traditional no, which I talked a little bit about earlier, the main character would wear a neutral mask that could change emotion based on the position of the mask. And they also had like devilish characters and stuff like that, where they would have like these overly dramatic, like, what you can expect devil masks. And fun fact, no is the oldest form of theater that is still performed in its original state today.
I think I did actually know that.
Probably. We took theater history. In some countries in Africa, masks are worn to erase the personality of the wearer and represent an ancestor or figure coming back from the dead.
Oh.
So, which is kind of true for all masks. It's
yeah.
like you're kind of taking out the actor and bringing on the character.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is just acting. For some people. So needless to say, masks and theater have always gone hand in hand, obviously. Even when you aren't wearing a mask, you might be wearing a figurative mask.
Oh my God.
So, of course, when thinking of a clear symbol for theater, one might happen to think of a mask. And that is exactly what happened. The happy and sad and or tragic and comedic, whatever you call them, masks have been a symbol for all forms of theater. With the birth of realism, masks have kind of been left out of modern theater, but sometimes in contemporary theater, those who reject realism and hold on to like either traditional forms of theater or try to kind of make theater a little different or whatever, you know, like No, holding on to traditional forms of theater, mm-hmm. and then Sleep No More, which kind of brought back that kind of like neutral mask because you as an audience member wear a mask.
Yeah.
If you don't know Sleep No More and you're walking through this space that is a like 20s version of Macbeth.
Mm-hmm.
And it just kind of like takes away your neutral and mm-hmm. you're just like, or not takes away your neutral.
It creates neutral.
It creates
for you.
Neutral for you. Yeah,
yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
And then also like many directors and designers in specifically sometimes like Germany, England or Korea or mm-hmm. China, like more like government funded theater can get away with mm-hmm. kind of these exaggerated forms. Like in America, we're so commercialized, so people love to see, like,
yeah.
movies or Disney yeah. and stuff like that. So we
you know what
get less away with masks.
That's true. What it reminds me of, though, is modern puppetry.
Yeah.
Because if we see something like, I mean, I feel like the biggest one was War Horse, where there was, like, a giant emotive puppet on stage, but the mm-hmm. the face of the puppet was being manipulated by an actor, and that works sort of the same way that a mask would. And then I think more recently there was a production of a show called The Woodsman or something like that.
Yeah,
that was, it
yeah.
was like, I think it was either Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs or it was Alice in Wonderland or something like that.
Yeah.
But it was done both with like live actors and puppetry, and like the little like woodsman puppet was sort of like the same idea of like using a mask for an actor, but it was like a whole body thing.
Yeah, you make a good point. And mm-hmm. a more popular example of that is mm-hmm. The Lion King.
Oh, yeah.
How,
yeah,
like,
of course.
The Lion King incorporates, like, masks and these exaggerated costumes directly with characters
yeah.
and the actor. And
yeah.
it's literally a part of their body.
Yeah.
And sometimes in those, like, you can, or some of the characters in The Lion King, you can see the face of the wearer as well as the mask, which
mm-hmm.
is quite an interesting and very cool design.
Yeah.
Because you can, those who can maybe pull out the emotions of the person who's playing with the mask is great, but then also you're getting like what was intended in the design in just the mask itself.
Right. And they like work together rather than like one
disjointed.
Taking over the other.
Yeah. Which is interesting in terms of masks, because masks are supposed to kind of cover the person. Mm-hmm. And instead of that, it's very cooperative.
Yeah. Come on, Julie Taymor.
Breaking
the mold.
Queen. Probably not the first time done, but amazing.
Yeah.
Job, nonetheless. Yeah. So specifically, the comedic and the tragic masks were chosen because they represent like the two major types of Greek theater, comedy and tragedy. Mm-hmm. I like had read somewhere that they were like the two basic emotions, so they thought they would represent it, and that's just false. Mm-hmm. I'm like, literally, absolutely not. It makes more sense because what they're representing is like all these forms of theater in general. Mm-hmm. So when you go back to the birthplace of modern theater, which is Greek theater, at least Western modern theater, mm-hmm. it, you know, they had the two types of plays, and so that makes sense. It's not a representation of actors, it's a representation of theater and performance in general.
Right.
So it makes sense why those two specific masks were chosen, kind mm-hmm. of thing. And the masks also represent muses. Little side note, the comedy mask represents Talia, which is the muse of comedy and poetry, and the tragedy mask represents Melpomene, mm-hmm. or Melpomene, who originally was the muse of singing but cursed by Hera to be the muse of tragedy because apparently Melpomene was impregnated by Zeus, mm-hmm. which was
many.
Her father.
Oh! Oh, that is a tragedy.
Because all the muses are Zeus's daughters.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Wow.
So both of these are Greek muses who, among others, are the source of inspiration for artists. Mm-hmm. Another parallel for like why masks represent theater. So all in all, masks, iconic, beloved, tragic, comedic, theater. Period. And that's all I have.
Wow. Oh my God. I feel like I learned so much.
There's a lot of information in
there.
There's
a lot of information, and I had forgotten a lot of it from my Bachelor of Fine Arts degree. So
a little refresher
for the
exam tomorrow.
Yeah. That was great. Thanks, Josh.
You're welcome.
Okay, Josh. I'm going to tell you about the ghost light.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. A ghost light, if you don't know what it is, it can come in various shapes and forms, but the most common and recognizable is a single electric light, the bulb often enclosed in a metal cage and mounted on a stand. So it's just like a standing lamp, but without a shade. It's kind of what it looks like. And there's oftentimes like a cage over the light bulb.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What's the cage for?
Hot. Hot, exactly. Nothing really said, but we can guess hot,
do not touch.
Yeah. So the classic, like, old-timey version of the light would probably use something like an Edison bulb. But with today's technology and energy conservation, a lot of the ghost lights being used today are actually just, like, LED bulbs that are on stage or, like, whatever the theater has on hand to put on this ghost light. So it's not quite as, like, ooh, spooky. So ghost lights are sometimes referred to as equity lights or equity lamps.
Yeah, why?
It's not super commonly used. Ghost light is definitely a more common phrase in reference to the light. Some people think that name comes from the Actors Union, Actors Equity Association, having at one time mandated the use of ghost lights in theaters, although now there doesn't seem to be any sort of rule like that exists. So it could be that it existed and it was just like a short-lived thing mm-hmm. where Equity was like, no, you have to have ghost lights in theaters. But yeah, that's the thought that comes behind that other secondary name. But we're going to use ghost light because it's a better name. So ghost lights are normally placed on the center of the stage or downstage center, sort of right near the orchestra pit, and they stay on throughout the night when a show is not performing and even sometimes when there's no show running in the theater at all. I know. It's just always on. So the ghost light doesn't have a clear start date of use. Some people think that it started in the mid to late 1800s. So there's a theater scholar named James Fisher who wrote in the Historical Dictionary of American Theater Beginnings that the ghost light, quote, comes from the days of gas-lit theaters and refers to dimly lit gas lights used to relieve pressure on gas valves.
Come on, gaslighting.
We love gaslighting. So they think that it was just like they had to lower the lights to relieve pressure, but they left them on. So it was like sort of like a half lit situation. But from there, we can basically just sort of infer that theaters left the lights running in some capacity until the invention of the electric light bulb, when the ghost light, as we know it now, began its use. Oh. So the purpose of a ghost light is...
Yes, this is what I'm waiting
this
for.
This is the real...
The real tea.
Right. What is it? It's a lamp. Why do we use it?
Oh, what is it? It's a lamp.
It's a lamp. I will tell you the point of the lamp. The most practical use is just for safety. So if you've never actually been on a stage before, depending on your venue, there can be steps up to the stage or on the stage. There can be trapdoors. There can be set pieces that are still out on the stage. And most importantly, the orchestra pit at the front of the stage. So the light is there to prevent accidents so that you don't like run into things or fall into the orchestra pit and hurt yourself.
Without a mattress?
Without a mattress there to catch you. Yep. And so that things like the main lighting console can be easily found and people can like flip on the lights to the rest of the theater without tripping over themselves.
A literal nightlight.
Yeah, it's very practical, where it's just like if somebody's working late or has to come in super early, they won't be blind and hurt themselves.
This is what I believe.
Okay. There's also a story out there that at one point, super long time ago, a burglar broke into a theater that wasn't using a ghost light, and he tripped and fell into the orchestra pit, broke his leg, and then sued the theater for damages.
Did he win?
I'm not sure, because it's sort of just like an urban legend that's out there that nobody really knows if it's true or not. So I have no idea, but a ghost light would, in theory, protect theaters from injury liability as well as just
from
like practicality.
You're trespassing.
Yeah.
So he would lose that lawsuit. I'm just calling it.
It's fine, Josh. It's probably not a real story.
If it is, I'm a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just what we can draw from this is that the light is to protect everyone.
It's practical.
It's practical. Yeah. Now, outside of the practical uses for a ghost light, the most time-honored belief of the ghost light comes from the name itself, that the light either appeases the ghosts who allegedly reside in most theaters, or it keeps ghosts away. So I am... Josh is rolling his eyes. He hates it.
I've just never understood the superstition that revolves around theater.
There's so much superstition in theater.
And
so much.
It's like, I don't believe in it myself, but I will never say Macbeth in the theater.
I know.
Just because other people have a conniption.
I know. Yeah, actors, I mean, even actors, production crew, whoever is working on the show, like everybody who works in theater has so many superstitions.
Yeah. And there's something I don't even know about, and I'll do it, and someone will be like,
Right. But I'm sure, like, I feel like most people I know have at least some sort of, like, pre-show ritual that is sort of like a superstition.
Yeah.
Do you have a pre-show ritual? You don't have to tell me what it is, but do you have one?
These days, no. I've had a weird relationship with theater.
Uh-huh.
I used to have... I don't want to get into it, but I'll just say that I used to have, like, this whole big deal, like, where I would, like, warm up and, like, do the specific things.
Yeah.
Now I'm just like, who cares? Theater is so not serious. It's just fun.
Yeah,
like,
that's fair
why
enough.
Does it need to be so... Yeah. Anyway,
yeah.
That's it.
I never had anything like super serious where it was like, oh, I spin around three times and then say purple and that's like going to give me a good show.
Right.
But I did. I'm pretty sure I would like fully stretch out before every show, even if it like wasn't a musical. It was just like I would feel better if I did like a whole... like body stretch thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So that's like sort of a pre-show ritual, but it's not quite. Some people have like really intense ones.
No, but that or they'll like is. It's like warming up in general is always good.
Yeah, yeah. But people will like wear the same socks for like every performance because it's lucky or you know something like that.
I've heard that for auditions too.
Yeah,
it's like people will always carry this or always they've always worn this shirt and it's brought them luck.
Right, exactly. There's a lot. So. We're gonna talk about the ghost light superstition, but before we get into it, because I am gonna tell some ghost stories, which is gonna be very fun. I did want to talk briefly about ghost lights and COVID because it like there was like a weird correlation between the two during our lovely pandemic that we're currently experiencing.
No.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you think it's going to be something crazy. It's not that crazy. It's actually kind of sweet, but...
Oh, okay. I immediately went to someone didn't have a ghost light on.
No.
And we got Broadway shut down.
No. That's not it. So the ghost light has always had this sort of feeling to it that while the actors and production team may not be in the theater, the show is never really over. There is still a presence of live theater in the space. So that feeling really took on new meaning and imagery to many people during the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic that has had theaters shut down for a year and a half. So many theaters worldwide who maybe hadn't left out a ghost light in the past did at the start of the pandemic, sort of as an indication or a sign that there was hope of reopening.
Oh, that is sweet. You're right.
Yeah, it's very sweet. And that the arts would always come back. It's a very nice, sentiment.
I hope those ghosts paid rent on those spaces.
So theater spaces from the Sydney Opera House to Broadway houses to regional theaters across the U.S. and Canada revived the tradition of the ghost light in the wake of the pandemic.
That's so weird.
I mean, I think a lot of places were doing it anyways.
And then it became a thing.
But yeah, so a lot of places who weren't started to, because it was like, we are going to come back. This is a sign someone will come back, yeah. You know. The Royal Alexandra Theatre in Toronto actually burned a ghost light through both the 1918 Spanish flu pandemic as well as throughout the COVID-19 crisis. So it's happened before.
And worked.
And worked.
Six will come back.
Oh, God. That's not six specifically. Six and only six will return to Broadway.
Mean Girls didn't make it. They didn't put on a ghost light.
So I can't verify this, but it has been said that currently every stage on Broadway has a ghost light running in one way or another.
Wow.
I know. I don't know.
I'd like to believe that.
That's like not something that I can personally go check, but it's what people have said.
Equity Brie going into every theater. Hello?
Hello. I'm here to inspect your ghost lights. So the ghost light has also inspired theater company names and virtual performances and experiences throughout the pandemic, including the Ghost Light Opera Series out of Australia, an art installation called Ghost Light from the Finnish National Theater, and theater companies out of Seattle, Iowa, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Oklahoma, to name just a few. So a lot of people have taken the name of the ghost light and like used it for their own production company to sort of like let it live on.
You're missing one important thing.
What?
A certain Facebook group.
Oh, is it? Was it called Ghostlight Housing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Well, because that was like a name controversy because it used to be something else that we're not supposed to say anymore.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, Ghostlight Housing. Okay, so that was all very cute and very sweet. But now I have to tell you some ghost stories from Broadway theaters.
They're both Broadway?
They are both Broadway theaters. There are
not
no stories.
Not me knowing that you have two stories.
I have two stories. They're both Broadway. I'm only going to talk about two now, but there are ghost stories from like every Broadway theater. So if you want to hear more Broadway ghost stories, let us know. And maybe we'll put them up on Patreon if there's any interest when we get our Patreon up and running. Okay. I am going to start telling you the story of the ghost from the New Amsterdam Theater. So this story is the most detailed one that I was able to find. The New Amsterdam Theater is said to be haunted by the ghost of Olive Thomas, a Ziegfeld Follies chorus girl. She appears so frequently that her photograph has been placed at every entrance to the theater so that anyone working there can greet her when they arrive and leave work each day they can say goodbye.
What?
Yeah.
Only her photo.
Only her photo.
It's there.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
What?
They put it there.
No, I know, but that's like, that superstition has gone so far that they're like, we have to put this photo here.
Yeah, it's at every entrance so people can say hello and goodbye every day.
You do have to say goodbye to the demons.
You have to say goodbye. And part of that, I don't know if I mentioned it later or not, so if I do, I might repeat myself. But part of that is because she's like pretty well behaved. As far as ghosts go, And so they want to make sure that, like, they respect her and they're really nice so that she continues to, like, be in a good mood and not, like, mess anything up. So they say hello and goodbye to her every day. So Olive was a chorus girl in the Ziegfeld Follies in 1915 and then in Midnight Frolics, which she played at the New Amsterdam and the New Amsterdam Roof, respectively. So the New Amsterdam used to have a theater on its rooftop as well. It was, like, a smaller venue, but it was, like, two theaters in one.
That's cute.
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore, but...
There's too much... There's building up there now.
I think they just renovated... It's like office spaces, so I think it's related to the theater. Disney owns the building now, so I think it's just like Disney offices. So nothing exciting, but they... The stage...
Nothing exciting.
The stage doesn't exist anymore.
By Disney.
So after her roles in these shows, Olive was scouted for silent films... And so she made several silent film movies and then later married a man named Jack Pickford. In 1920, Jack and Olive were on a vacation in Paris when Jack revealed that he had syphilis.
Nice.
Most likely
they were on vacation?
They were on vacation in Paris. I mean, he was like, they're like looking at the Eiffel Tower and he's like, mon amour. I have something to tell you. He wasn't French, but they were in France.
Mon ami.
Mon amour, I have the syphilis.
The syphilis.
Yeah. So, vacation ruined.
No, it's good to be honest with your partner.
Yeah, but maybe wait till you're back from Paris. I don't know.
Do you announce to your partner that you have an STD in Paris? Email us at thingamabob.
We'll post an Instagram poll.
Okay.
Oh, God.
That's better. Anyway, go ahead.
Anyways, yeah, he told her on vacation, and then he told her, like, you most likely have it because you're my wife. So, sorry. Now, after receiving this news, Olive died in suspicious circumstances after consuming the entire bottle's worth of her husband Jack's mercury bichloride pills. They don't know if... it was murder, if it was suicide, if it was an accident, we don't know. But she died from taking these pills.
It wouldn't make sense for her to commit suicide after finding out about syphilis.
I don't know. Maybe she was really distraught about it.
But why would he kill her?
I don't know. That's why it's mysterious circumstances. Most likely it was an accident, but we don't know. Ooh.
A full bottle?
A full bottle.
That is not an accident.
You're right.
You said most likely.
Yeah, I know. I take it back. I take it back. I don't know.
Maybe she was mad.
Mm-hmm.
And they got in a heated fight.
Maybe.
And
she ran into my pills 10 times.
No! Wait, what show is in the New Amsterdam? Or was?
At this time?
Mm-hmm.
No,
now.
Right now?
Yeah. Well, not now, but what before the pandemic.
It was Aladdin. Anyways... Her body was brought back from Paris to the Bronx, which I think is where she was from, for her burial. But not long after, workers at the New Amsterdam began reporting that they had run into Olive at the theater. These early reports described a girl wearing a sash and carrying a blue pill bottle. And when the witnesses, through the years, imitated her voice, they all used the same tone and inflections, even though these people had never met each other. It was just like describing the ghost. They all described the exact same voice.
Okay. I'm sorry. I don't believe in ghosts, but I'm listening. I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
Appearances were reported sporadically throughout the 1920s, but petered out until the Disneyfication of Broadway. Speaking of what's in the theater right now, it's a Disney show. So Disney brought old empty theaters such as the New Amsterdam back into the fray of a busier and more family-friendly Times Square. During restoration of the theater in the 90s, workers reported that their work areas were being disturbed by a woman carrying a blue bottle. And sightings of Olive would continue throughout the theater's productions of King David and the Lion King, which was initially at the New Amsterdam before it moved. Fun fact. Yeah. So one night guard actually reportedly quit after seeing a woman walk across the stage and disappear through a solid wall. Sounds of distant tap dancing are often heard, and Olive can be spotted most frequently in the trap space beneath what used to be the New Amsterdam Roof Theater stage.
Well, that would make sense.
Yeah, because that's where she performed.
And she died, so she's beneath the ground, but above the other theater.
I guess they use it for, like, offices and storage now, so you can, like, actually go there, but yeah.
And see her?
Yeah.
Any stories from the offices?
Not that I know of.
That's what I thought.
One of the more recent Olive accounts came during previews for Aladdin. So Disney Theatrical's VP of Operations, Dana Amendola, said that while reading an email from the new female conductor of the show, she wondered out loud what the Follies girls would have thought of a female conductor. As if in response to her question, four of the light bulbs in the dressing room she was in flickered on and off, even though they had just been replaced. So Amendola took that as a sign that Olive was saying that she liked the idea of a female conductor. The New Amsterdam doesn't actually have a true ghost light on the stage, what with all these, like, ghost sightings.
What?
They don't have a traditional one, but it's because of the building classification. I guess legally, they are required to leave more lights on than just one, so they essentially just have to leave all of the lights in the theater on.
Come on, money.
Yeah, they... I know, that electricity bill is probably a nightmare.
That environment.
Yeah. They consider their ghost lights the ones that are just up in their grid system. So they don't have, like, one designated ghost light. They just leave the lights in the theater on.
No wonder she's so present.
Right? That's what I'm saying. It's because they don't have one specific light for her.
Where's the Edison bulb?
So she's like, oh my God, I can see everything. She'll just haunt more.
Travel
all around.
Ramalama-lama.
Hot dog. That's what people from the 20s said, right?
In America.
Well, she was American, so.
Sometimes things that are ghostly are American.
Okay. All right. So that's the New Amsterdam. Now I'm going to tell you about the Palace Theater, which is much shorter. So the Palace Theater is thought to have the most
ghosts. What's in the Palace Theater right now?
Josh.
I feel like this is important information. I'm actually serious.
The last thing that I am aware of was SpongeBob. It's the one that's, like, literally right in Times Square.
Okay, just that's for context the for theater. The people.
Yeah, I don't know if there was something after SpongeBob that was in it, but that's my, like, last reference point. Okay. Of SpongeBob.
I'm sorry, okay. I'm just saying, because it's like, you know, the Palace Theater, which housed mm-hmm. SpongeBob before the pandemic, you know?
All right, whatever. The show is not important to the ghosts. The Palace Theater is thought to have the most ghosts out of all Broadway houses, possibly over 100 different ghosts. They all congregate there.
Why?
They have meetings.
This is so ridiculous.
Okay, just listen.
I'm trying to listen.
Okay. So some sightings include a child who plays peekaboo in the mezzanine, a musician dressed all in white in the orchestra pit, a mysterious figure who passes by open doorways at late hours. Stop looking at me like that.
This is American Horror Story.
Yeah, it's just ghosts. It's just ghosts, okay? Okay, and even the ghost of Judy Garland herself is said to haunt the palace.
Now that I can get behind.
Okay. Despite Ms. Garland making appearances at the theater, the most famous legend is actually that of the ghost of acrobat Louise Borsellino. Borsellino. In the 1950s, he attempted to cross a tightrope without a net and ended up falling to his death.
Classic.
Yeah. So it's believed that his ghost still resides in the theater and swings from the rafters when the shows are done for the night. Apparently, he reenacts his final acrobatic attempt and lets out a blood-curdling shriek before falling to his death over and over again.
Ooh.
Now you're in?
I wasn't before, but now you're giving me drama.
Very dramatic. There haven't been very many reports in recent years of ghosts, but one actor from the 2011 revival of Annie said that he heard someone call out Judy when he was alone in his dressing room. And we know that Judy Garland's ghost has frequented the palace.
Miss Garland, if you're nasty.
And that is all of the ghost stories that I have for you tonight. If you want more, let us know. I have a fun time telling them. Josh has an awful time listening.
No, I was very entertained. I was quite entertained.
Yeah, and that's it. And those ghosts are the reason why we have ghost lights.
Thank you. I don't know why I have such a thing with ghosts.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really believe in ghosts either, but it's fun to hear the stories.
It's fun to hear the stories. Do
okay.
it.
Okay. Well, there's other more specific stories from other theaters that I can tell you at some point, just not now.
I'll be subscribing to that Patreon. And thank you, Brie.
Thank you, Josh.
And thank you all so much for listening. If you have any theme suggestions for us, you can send them over to thingamabobpodcast@gmail.com or slide into our DMs on Twitter at thingamabobpod or on Instagram at thingamabobpodcast. While you're there, give us a follow. And please subscribe to our show on Apple Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you like to listen. Please leave us a review. It really helps us show up on the iTunes charts or the new and recommended page. And make sure to join us next week where we wear our best outfit, pack up our backpack, and go to school. I don't know what's going on.
Hey, thanks, Jeff Goldblum. thank you for joining us, because now we are all two things smarter.
Thingamabob!